Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. As we're in the month of Elul and approaching the high holidays, please consider a donation to Pardes in honor of the podcast. Your donation of any amount would be greatly appreciated and makes a real difference in funding the podcast. You can donate anytime online via www.donate.pardesusa.org. Thank you very much. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreus is speaking on Parshat Ki Tiseh. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a faculty member at Pardes and serves also as our Director of Special Programs. And now, Rabbi Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. Parshat Ki Tiseh looks like a big mess. We have laws regarding family relations, such as marrying a prisoner of war or the incorrigible son. We have laws regarding neighbors, nature, and clothing. We have laws about sexual misconduct, including unchastity, adultery, forced sex. We have laws regarding forbidden relationships. We have miscellaneous laws regarding soldiers, slaves, prostitutes, commitments to God and neighbors. Then more laws regarding marriage. Then objects taken by a pawnbroker or kidnapping or skin afflictions. Then we have laws protecting the vulnerable, wages, transgenerational punishment, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, flogging, muzzling an ox, more to do with marriage, honest weights and measures, and finally, to top it all off, we have the charge to remember Amalek. It's no surprise that many modern scholars, many biblical critics, say things like, this parasha is haphazardly ordered, but this is not something I find helpful or useful. So I proposed a number of questions to my class in Parshat HaShavua at Pardes yesterday about this parasha, and I'd like to share their and my insights with you today. The first question I asked, of course, is there any underlying theme of this parasha? Is there any theme we can find that goes through everything that can explain what this real miscellany of laws is doing over here? And secondly, even harder, is there any logic to their placement? Why is the one placed after the other? Is there a reason for doing it that way? A second question I proposed to them, how is this parasha, Ki Tetzeh, connected to the previous parasha of Shoftim, which deals with law systems, how to set up a court of law, and the judicial system, kings, priests, prophets, cities of refuge, laws for war, and unsolved murders? And the third question, something completely different, is I presented the debate that we often have between conservatives and liberals when somebody does something wrong. Liberals will say it's because of people's upbringing or because of social circumstances, whereas conservatives are more likely to say it was because of bad choices that they made. So I presented my class with three very, very different questions. What is the underlying theme of this parasha? How are the different items connected? And how is it connected to the previous parasha? And what does this parasha have to say about the debate between liberals and conservatives as to why people do bad things? Needless to say, they came up with a number of very, very good ideas. In some cases, the theories do not cover every single last item of the parasha, but I was willing to entertain ideas that dealt with the bulk. So Matt and Becky came up with the idea that the same way we have purity, laws of purity and impurity between people and God, so we have here purity of relations, a parasha that deals with how men relate to women, parents to children, employers to employees, lenders to borrowers, humans to animals. It's a parasha which speaks about both property and life being respected. Carmel pointed out that this is a parasha which speaks about balancing hierarchy and humility. We have a very powerful idea that everybody has human worth, that even if you're marginal, you're still in God's image, and that we need to create some kind of a society where the poor and the weak can be protected from the rich and the strong. Finally, two sets of chevrutot, Becky, Emily, Rina, and Josh, pointed out that it's really a section of concentric circles. The parasha starts with the smallest family unit, the smallest unit, which is the family. It goes around to who one may or may not marry, and it branches out to people who are on the edges of society, soldiers, slaves, prostitutes, debtors, people who owe money, people with skin afflictions, and finally, it ends up with Amalek, with the obligation to blot out Amalek, which is totally outside of society. So they saw the parsha being connected in such a way that it goes from the most specific, the closest to the average person, all the way to those who are on the margins, or perhaps even the enemies of the Jewish people. So I think even here, we have a very clear and some very beautiful ideas showing that the parasha is not haphazard. Maybe it's about purity of relationships. Maybe it's about balancing hierarchy and humanity. And perhaps it's ordered in such a way as to go from the least, from the most specific, from the most close to home, to the margins of society, and finally to those who are outside of good Jewish society completely. I was very, very happy with these answers that my students gave. It gave me a lot of nachas at how creatively they thought and what nice theories they came up with that answered so many of these different issues. However, I've also found a very interesting article by a woman called Heidi Rome, which deals with a lot of these same questions, but she does it in a slightly different way. She points out that the parasha starts off with the law about what to do with a woman who's captured in war. A soldier captures a woman in war. He wants to marry her. Instead of being able to rape her, or he actually wants to probably have sex with her, let's be honest about that. Instead of being able to have sex with her, or God forbid, to rape her, instead she has to be brought home. She has to be left for a while. She grows her hair. She grows her nails. And finally, if the man still wants to marry her, he has to marry her and she has to become his wife. She's treated respectfully, and if she does not become his wife, she is instead released and becomes free. Here we have a very, very powerful example of somebody who, first of all, is treated respectfully, and secondly, in which the categories are fluid. She's able to move out of the status of being a prisoner and into the status of either being a free woman or being a wife. So we have fluidity and we have protection, which is the exact opposite of what the parasha ends with. It's like bookends, and the parasha ends with Amalek. Amalek have an assigned status. They can never change. You can never stop being Amalek. And not only that, as opposed to talking about protection of the weak, we're now speaking about protection of ourselves against those who seek to destroy us, Amalek being, of course, the classic enemy of the Jewish people. So we have two very interesting bookends. On the one hand, protection of the weak and fluidity of status. At the end, protection of ourselves against the strong and the wicked, and permanence of categories. I'd like to take this just one step further and claim that this whole parsha contains a very, very powerful subtext of these issues. One is recognizing that we have both in the world. We have times sometimes when status is fixed, when people are, for example, restrictions on who may come into the temple, marriage. We have times when laws against certain garments that aren't allowed to be worn. We have certain items in this parasha which are fixed. There's nothing we can change about them. On the other hand, we have items or people who are fluid. For example, a debtor, once they pay their debt, is no longer your debtor. A person who has a skin affliction and who is cured with a skin affliction is no longer prejudiced against in any way. A woman who is accused of unchastity and then is found not to be guilty, goes out of the status of a sota and into a different status. I think that what this parasha is doing is recognizing a life reality, recognizing that there are things in life that are fixed and cannot be changed, and recognizing that there are things in life that are fluid and malleable, and saying, regardless of whether things are fixed, or regardless of whether things are malleable, we have to use categories to create a world in which everybody is treated with the maximum amount of respect and the maximum amount of holiness. It's very, very often very trendy, very nice to say, oh, I don't believe in categories. I know I like to say this a lot. I don't like to be defined. I don't want you to tell me who I am. But separating, categorizing, drawing boundaries, making laws is inevitable in all human life. Even people who say, I don't like categories, very, very often have categories of their own. And I think what this parasha is saying is, given that we make all these categories in the world, given that this is how human beings are, let's make the most of it. Let's see how we can use these categories to create a good and a beautiful world. And so I think in a very, very powerful way, this parasha is very, very beautifully connected and crafted. I think it's very interestingly connected to the previous parasha. This parasha is speaking about laws of the everyday life. The previous parasha is speaking about putting together a system of public officials, of general affairs of the nation. Am Yisrael are about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. They're going to have the challenge to form an ideal society. This has got lots and lots of opportunities, but it also has lots and lots of pitfalls. What these two parishes are doing are preparing the Jews, not really the Jews, preparing Am Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael. It's preparing them by saying they're going to have to have a legal system for when things go wrong, but also telling them they've got to be sure that things don't go wrong by creating a good society in which people are able to live together with each other in justice and in holiness. And in terms of this, I think in a very powerful way, it says something about the debate between liberals and conservatives. I think that the parasha is saying that all three elements we spoke about, society, the system, and individual choice, are all three important. Parashat Shoftim speaks about how important it is to create a society with the correct structure. Parashat Ki Tetzeh speaks about how important it is to have good family life and a good society. But shot through both of them is the very, very powerful idea that ultimately it's human beings who make very, very powerful decisions. I'd like to conclude on an educational note and point out that all the words that I've said today and all the great ideas that my students came up with, and which Heidi Rom, who wrote a wonderful article about it, came up with, all of these come not from studying commentators, not from looking into one particular pasuk, one particular verse in detail, but from looking at the structure of the parasha. And I think it's important to note very, very often that study of structure, study of form, can very, very often be a powerful way to get to meaning of a text. And speaking of meaning, may we all be zocher, may we all be privileged to, in our own lives, see the meaningful and beautiful ideas of these two parashas coming to actuality, to have a legal system which is just and honest, to have family relationships where people treat each other with goodness and respect, to have a world in which people make wise choices, and all in all, may these parishes come to life in our own times. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening, and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkreus. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.